I'm Mark Richardson, and welcome to Remodeling Mastery. Remodeling Mastery is a podcast series that's really designed to help you think and reflect on your business, not just do your business. Your remodeling has become fairly complex, both in terms of certainly the projects and the process, but also the consumer themselves. You know, remodeling has always kind of responded to what's happening in terms of the marketplace, but specifically to consumer sentiment. You know, today I want to talk about a topic that is really important as you think kind of long term about how the consumer is adjusting and pivoting and changing. You know, and the title is "The Prospect Ain't What They Used to Be." You know, all prospects are not created equal. So as you think about this topic, if you don't really understand kind of specifically who the target, who's in the bullseye, so to speak, of your client and your prospect, chances are you're not going to be very successful. Now, I don't think for a second that consumers have changed, you know, 30, 40 degrees, but I do think they've adjusted 1 or 2 degrees. Now, what does 1 or 2 degrees mean? If I'm flying from New York down to Miami, 1 degree off means that flight would put me in Cuba. So you don't have to necessarily be off by too much to really miss the mark. So today what I want to do is I want to take kind of a little bit of time to reflect on history, going back roughly the last 20 years or so, and kind of walk you through at least what I've seen both in the trenches as well as from a higher level. Then after that, I want to talk about some data that really supports who the consumer is today and the prospects, and then give you a few tips and techniques of how do you really adjust your specific game to adjust to this new consumer. So starting a little bit with history going back, let's say to 2004, 2005. Now, those were in many ways we call sometimes the go-go times. They were, the phone was ringing off the hook. We had pricing that was nicely moving up. Profitability was very strong. I think for the most part, both the consumer and the remodeler was quite happy with the process that was going on. Now, if you really get back to the why was that? Well, the leading driver at that time, in addition to just general consumer confidence, was home appreciation. In many of the markets in the country, we were seeing literally as much as double-digit home appreciation on an annualized basis. So imagine, for example, you might have had a home in the Midwest, and it was a $500,000 home. Well, literally, in the course of developing that concept's design, putting together the parts and pieces, that home value went from 500 to 550, then the following year to a little over 600. So you were seeing a level of home appreciation that was going on that, quite frankly, didn't really matter how much the projects cost, because just purely appreciation of the homes, homeowners would have the equity and be able to get the cost back. Well, as we inch forward and we got into 2007 and 2008, when we hit kind of the wall and the crash, what we found was homeowners still had a thirst for doing remodeling. However, it was not a time that was keeping up with the Joneses. They were cutting back dramatically on the scope of work. Matter of fact, an interesting little indicator out there was the average ticket size, the average project size. So most better remodeling companies, most full-service remodeling companies were actually down by 30 or 40% from 2007, say, to 2009, in large part because of the crash. But when you look at the number of clients, the number of projects were for the most part the same as they were in 2006. However, the average ticket went down 30 to 40%, and therefore the business went down. Between 2009 and 2015, I really saw the shock of 8 being so dramatic was really kind of growing back out of it. We saw nice little increases. We saw improvements. We saw trainings. We saw things that were happening both on the product and certainly on the consumer as well as the remodeling business side. But once we got into 2015, we really started to see price escalation. Many people think that was really only in the last few years, but we started to see it. Matter of fact, I wrote a column for a professional remodeler in 2018, 2019, really talking about the level of cost increases that were going on. And in my surveys in that period of time, I was finding about a 15 to 20% annualized increase in the cost of remodeling. Now, again, when you're looking at this on, you know, what's the difference between $200,000 and $215,000 or $240,000, it just doesn't seem like that much. But when you saw it on an annualized basis, the cost of remodeling was going up pretty dramatically. That $100,000 kitchen literally over the course of, you know, 3 or 4 years was becoming almost $200,000 and certainly beyond. So because of that cost, it didn't really happen necessarily overnight, but it did influence, I think, the consumer in terms of their perspective, what they were going about remodeling, and we saw a shift even in the type of remodeling projects that were out there as well. Then March of 2020, that's when COVID hit. And I predicted at the time about 25% of the remodelers wouldn't even make it through. However, I was wrong, as many were, and the recession that we experienced that period of time was the shortest in history, only a couple months, but in large part because I think the consumer was hunkered down, obviously with some of the government funding, certainly made it just fine. And now they're shifting the amount of time that they were spending on all the other things in their lives, and now they were focused on their family and their home. Remodeling was a silver lining of the pandemic. You know, we saw the phones ringing off the hook. We saw sales being order taker during the pandemic period of time. And we saw, I think, again, price escalation continued to climb, in large part because of supply chain challenges. Interest rates certainly were creeping up at the time. And we saw a dynamic that really changed it pretty dramatically. So many, you know, have described or tried to describe what it was like from, you know, a remodeler or certainly a consumer's perspective during that COVID times. I wrote about, you know, it's kind of like driving in a fog. You didn't know whether there was cliff ahead. You didn't know. You couldn't see to the left or right. You didn't know what was in the future. But you could look in the rearview mirror and it kind of made sense of what you just experienced. You know, my friend Allison referred to it as a very wonky kind of time in 21 and 22. You know, my friends at Google, they actually described it a little bit like an Escher painting where you didn't really know what was around the corner and everything was like distorted, kind of like walking through one of these mirror kind of events at a carnival where everything was weird and everything was distorted. Now, we started to create some clarity, and we saw headwinds being supply chain, price escalation, certainly in interest rates and those kind of things. But we also saw tremendous tailwinds. Tailwinds as the phone was ringing off the hook, and sales, quite frankly, were relatively easy. And I would even argue that the client at that point was relatively patient and certainly willing to wait because they were experiencing this throughout all aspects of their lives. As we moved and kind of got out of the COVID kind of muck, so to speak, what we found is the consumers had become, as my friend Pam Torrey said, feral. Now, I actually looked up the definition of feral, and feral means escape from captivity. So if you really think about it, homeowners were hunkered down, and now they're escaped from captivity. And because they're escaped from captivity, they're starting to look at their projects, they're starting to look at their lives, they're starting to look at travel, all these kind of things very, very differently than they were when they were hunkered down during that COVID time. So the consumer today in the 2024 is not the same consumer that was there during COVID. It's not the same prospect and consumer pre-COVID. It's really something that we're learning and seeing and having a better understanding of who they are and what they are moving forward. And I think as a remodeler, you've got to realize, in addition to everything else, you are a therapist. That is about the consumer. You are, in fact, a marriage counselor. That is about the couple. And you certainly are an investment advisor. In the price escalation that we've seen, they more than ever need your help. So understanding this data and understanding some of these tips that I'll give you here in a minute, I think are going to be important. So let's just look at some of the data points as it relates to kind of what's going on with this prospect that ain't what they used to be. Data, the beauty of data is it doesn't lie. There's no emotion to it. You can actually balance some of the very objective and subjective things together to get, I think, the true picture of the story. And, you know, I think when it comes to this post-COVID consumer out there, as we certainly talked about on a panel I led 6 months ago at Harvard, that we're still learning about who this consumer is. We're still learning about this workplace environment and working from home and all those kind of things. We're still trying to get an understanding of what's going on. So let's talk about a few themes and certainly some data points. Number one, and I heard this at a conference, that today your client certainly is your competitor, but everything is your competition. It's everything in their lives that is competition. It's the concerts, it's the travel, it's so many different things. And unless you're really figuring out a way to crack the code and be a priority in their lives, then they're going to make you probably an option. The second theme that I think is interesting, that I've certainly talked about, but I really feel this very personally as well, and that's this theme that I heard from Jane Jelski. She said, consumers today feel they're okay, but it's not okay. In other words, their situation in terms of their finances, their home, their family, they're kind of got their act together. They're okay. However, the world is not okay. The political environment's not okay. The environment's not okay. There's a lot of things that aren't okay. And when the environment is not okay, it's going to influence how they are feeling about their remodeling decisions. So in many ways, you've got to be today kind of a voice of reason to help them, you know, really kind of marry those two together. The third that I heard that I think is especially interesting as we look at kind of high tech versus high touch in terms of the relationships with clients, and we've certainly tipped that pendulum more to high tech type of techniques, is remodeling is extremely personal and highly human. So finding that balance today between the human side and the technology side of the relationships that are out there that are really important. So a few more specific things on the data front that I think are kind of interesting. You know, in the past, we've been dependent on the baby boomers as being, you know, really having the lion's share of the money. And we even had experience of period of time, certainly back in, we started this back in 2016, 17, where a lot of the actual dollars that were flowing into the remodeling activity were in many ways not only for baby boomers, but they were also, when you're doing projects for younger generation, in many ways, their parents were helping to fund the projects as well. But when you look at what the baby boomers or the younger generation care about in their behaviors, it's really different according to real hard data. The baby boomers, for example, today, which is obviously older generation, are actually proud to conserve. Now, they may have the money, but they're proud to conserve. So you need to think about how you're guiding them through the decisions. Now, what's interesting is the younger generation, maybe because of the way they're brought up, maybe because they have access to funds from their family. I don't know the reason exactly why. However, they are happy to splurge. So when you see this kind of dichotomy of the two, the splurgers and the conservers, you know, you need to understand, I think, who that prospect is if you're going to be successful. Next one is, I think, a really interesting comment that Jane Jelski also made. And she said that 34% of the homeowners who inquire about a remodeling project with a remodeler are only curious. They classify themselves as curious. Now, are you approaching all those leads, all those things coming in, are you approaching them as projects or just someone that's curious, just someone that's doing a little bit of sniffing around? Now, how you go about approaching your questions that you're asking, both in terms of the lead intake as well as in terms of the initial meetings with clients, are really very different if someone's just curious versus someone is quite serious. Okay, the next one I think is interesting, and that is we found that a lot of times homeowners, because of the price escalation, say, you know, I'm just going to try to tackle this myself, or we discover it's a quote-unquote do-it-yourself type of lead that comes in. But what's interesting is the data supported 32% of the people out there, the consumers that say they're going to do it themselves, end up bringing in a professional remodeler to do it for them. Now, partially it's because of their time. They don't have time. And I think they realize the complexity of doing the remodeling relative to what the quality that they want is not something they can accomplish. Another interesting thing, and I hear this a lot from, you know, especially from individual salespeople in remodeling, that, oh, they're talking to other people. They're talking to a lot of other people. Well, sometimes when a consumer is telling you that they're talking to other people, that's just kind of a polite way for them to say that, you know, I'm not just ready to buy. Maybe they're curious at this point. Who knows? However, since with some of the Google data that's been out there, when they did some surveys, they found that 40% of the homeowners, 40% said they're only talking to one company. And another 20%, they've only talked to two. So if you can go in, more times than not, your competition is not necessarily other folks out there. It's just making an impact, certainly with the client. One last little data point, and this comes from Cleveland Research and my friend Mike Bozick, who's, you know, given me some insights on many, many things. And that is they've actually surveyed and they found homeowners are saying today, I want my project. I'm willing, and this is the key point, I'm willing to adjust the specifications to get my project. So for those people from the past, many, many years ago, about keeping up with the Joneses or just assuming they want to put in a Marvin or Pella window, they're probably willing to go with a builder-grade window if, in fact, it means getting that project for themselves or more of a stock cabinet more than a semi-custom cabinet if it means ending up with a new space that's renovated and then they can smile when they walk in. So you've got to break down, I think, some of these assumptions that you have if, in fact, you're going to be more successful. And like I said, these are 1 or 2 degrees different. These are not wholesale change that you need to shift fundamentally what you're doing. Okay, a few tips and techniques that I want you to think about. Number one, today more than ever, you don't judge the book by the cover. So we have a tendency to look at, you know, the location of the home, look at the value of the home. When we're driving up to the home, we look at the condition of the home and certainly the type of cars that are in the driveway and those kind of things. And I'm telling you, stop doing that. Stop doing that. And I'll tell you why. Number one is there's been a wonderful book that was written many years ago that I read at the time, and it talked about the millionaire next door. You know, you do not know who that person is just by looking at the facade, just by looking at the book on the cover. You've got to go much deeper. And by going much deeper, that relationship is really going to reveal whether, in fact, it's appropriate. Now, many, many clients out there, even after you give them the kind of the sticker shock of the levels of investment, a friend of mine always asks the question afterwards, you know, if we come back with some really cool ideas that are going to be an extra $100,000 or $200,000 more, what's your reaction going to be? And what he shared with me is 40% of the time, the homeowners will say, you know, I can afford what I want to get to this project. And therefore, you know, I'd love to see all the different ideas before we hone in on exactly what we want to do. So stop judging the book by the cover. And I think if you go in there, you'll not only generate, I think, the right kind of relationships, but you'll see the right prospects kind of floating into your business. Number two is today more than ever, you've got to ask a lot more questions. You've got to ask a lot more questions when it comes to not just what they want to do, but what's the motivation behind this? You know, one of the things I oftentimes will ask groups, three questions as it relates. Probably the most important question to be asking is why. You know, why should they do this project? You know, if it doesn't make sense for them to do the project, chances are that the energy that's going to go into this is not going to happen. Second is, why should they do this project now? It's very important in terms of the cadence and the timing to know their sense of urgency and why they should do it now. And then last is really more about you and the services and the professionalism and everything you provide is why should they do it with you? Now, by asking deeper questions, I think, with a homeowner, you can come up with the right value proposition as it really relates. Other questions to ask really wrap around, I think, their priorities. A quick little exercise that's kind of fun is when you're working with partners, ask them, you know, homeowners today find that they care about one of these three things more than one of the others. And the three things are the quality of the design or construction, two is the cost of the remodeling, and three is the timing it takes, time to go through the decision process, but also the construction process itself. So ask homeowners which of those things are the most important and actually play the role of a little bit of marriage counselor as it relates to helping to guide them through. You know, ask them when it comes to the budget, you know, would you want me to design to your budget and that's the ceiling? Or would you want me to explore all sorts of ideas, see what they're going to cost, and then we can adjust and cut back if we need to? By framing the right questions for the homeowner, you're going to see better outcomes. Number three on my list is challenge their assumptions. Now, they may think, for example, they want a certain type of product, a certain type of window. For example, if they wanted a Pella window, ask them why they want the Pella window. Let them know if we go with a builder grade window, for example, that window is probably many times better than their existing windows. Do they really want to spend that extra $10,000 or $20,000 just having that little bit of extra quality in terms of some of those products? Now, I'm not endorsing necessarily builder quality window, but I am encouraging you as you work with a homeowner, challenge their assumptions. Try to show them ways that they can actually save money and not spend more money. If you want to be that trusted advisor, try to challenge their assumptions. And it's going to create, I think, you as a differentiator between other members of the pack. Okay, number four on my list of tips and techniques is really focus on the right client. You know, 80% of your time is going to be spent on 20% of your clients. And I will say many, many folks that I help to kind of dig themselves out of tricky situation is they shouldn't have allowed that shark to swim in the net in the first place. So go and ask yourself, you know, some of those key questions on the right client. Many, many years ago, we had a fella that actually, I heard at a talk, said 18% of the homeowners out there will not allow you to make a profit. And I didn't believe that at first, but I went back and looked at the last couple hundred clients that we'd done projects for, and I found that 40 of them did not allow us to hit the right profit or gross profit margins. So he was actually right. So we actually developed a right client checklist. A right client checklist is all it is a series of questions. You can develop your own series of questions, or you can go back and search in terms of articles I've written and certainly talked about in terms of podcasts. For example, You know, do they value your professional advice? Now, you know when a client doesn't value your professional advice. Well, if they don't value your advice, they're probably going to be the wrong client. Or, you know, do they have realistic expectations? Expectations in terms of time, expectations in terms of budget, all those kind of things. Do they have realistic expectations? And a third, which is a little bit different, is are they emotionally stable? You cannot deal with unpredictable, emotionally unstable people when it comes to. So if you can go down through this list of 10 questions, you will find, I think, a lot of clarity. And if you can let the right ones swim into the net and let the wrong ones gracefully say no to, you're going to be more successful. Okay, number five on my list, and then I'm going to wrap this up. All wraps around the topic of time. You know, time today is a very critical differentiator. Differentiator in terms of you, differentiator in terms of how the client makes their decisions. You know, my friend Tanya Donahue says, you know, time kills deals. You know, time is not on your side. You've got to focus on the subject of time today. Speed sells. Question how fast you're able to move through. If a client is calling you today on a Tuesday at 12, get back to them in terms of having a meaningful conversation, not just gathering a few facts, meaningful conversation, either that same day or certainly by the next morning. When you're going to set up a time for a call, set it up not in 2 days, not in 7 days, but set it up in 2 or 3 days. Time is not on your side. It's all the other distractions in their lives that are going to float in. So if you can be a little bit more top of mind, not only in terms of making sure the project's still a priority, but also making sure that they're focused on you because they don't necessarily want to call a whole bunch of folks. But so time is not on your side. And if you can help them create a sense of urgency, I think that will really help. By looking at the clients and the prospects, but also determining their sense of urgency and the pace they want to move through the project, it will help you put the right energy in the right place. So, for example, one little metaphor I oftentimes train on is, you know, think about this as like a train journey for a minute here. You know, clients fall into three different categories. Those that want to be on the bullet train, and that is you're going so fast, A to B, you're getting to your destination quickly. But along the process, you're really not enjoying the view. The train is moving so fast. It's not about the view. It's about getting to the destination. The other extreme is the scenic train. It's kind of traveling through the Canadian Rockies. It's taking several days to take what could be several hours to do. Many clients, they want to touch, they want to feel, they want to savor the decisions. That's okay as long as that's consistent with what you see the expectations are. And then in between those two is kind of a hybrid, which I call the commuter train. The commuter train is getting from A to B. It's very, very effective. It stops along the way that are appropriate to make it the most efficient it can be. And that's the third. So ask the clients up front, do they want to be on the bullet train? Do they want to be on a scenic train or more of a commuter train? And try to unpack that, what that might mean in the remodeling process. And then when it comes to time, allow them to be in the right place or the right type of train and then adjust your processes to really be able to do that. So I want to wrap up certainly our topic today and just reiterate, you've got to understand the history. You've got to let the data that I've talked about really help to guide you. Don't have a lot of false positives in your thinking. And also, you know, follow some of these themes and ideas and techniques that I'm talking about. And I think you're going to see a lot more clarity and you're going to get that 1 or 2 degrees and see dramatic difference in terms of the results. Take care, everyone.